He was supported by Petrosol Platinum Energy, energizing dreams. Our top stories: Ghana's public debt balloons by over 70 billion cedis in just 3 months, as latest Joy News research shows external component alone accounts for more than 90% of the swell. Also, Africa Education Watch is calling for urgent parliamentary action to address the growing truancy crisis among school children, as new data shows that betting and galamsey activities are driving more children out of school.
Many economic drivers, child labor, galamsey, betting, these three things are normally male-dominated illegal activities for children, I must say.
We have details, plus we'll hear from the Education Committee of Parliament. Office of the Special Prosecutor raises concerns over insufficiency of annual budget. In sports,
Ghana FA announces a high-profile friendly for the Black Stars in March 2026.
We have details of the sports news later. Also, the new sound of Christmas, how Ghana's blend of rhymes, high life and Afrobeat is giving the festive season a fresh modern rhythm. We'll hear more in our Christmas series, Joy to the World. And if you're looking for a way to cool off this festive season, come with us as we tell you more about the perfect Boxing Day escape, Joy FM Family Party in the Park.
There'll be good music, great live shows, great playlists, and more importantly, family-oriented activities that Daddy, Mommy can participate in.
These and more with me, Pearl Ofori. This is Joy News, independent, fearless, and credible. In our first story this afternoon, Africa Education Watch is calling for urgent government action to tackle a worrying trend of truancy among school children in the five regions of the north. The report revealed that over 3,500 have so far dropped out of school in Northern, Savannah, Northeast, Upper East and Upper West regions in 2025 alone. First, listen to the Executive Secretary of Africa Education Watch, Kofi Asare.
If you look at the drivers, mainly economic drivers, child labor, galamsey, betting, these three things are normally, you know, male-dominated activities, illegal activities for children, I must say. And so you would expect that in Talensi, for instance, where galamsey is keeping many young boys out of school, you will see more girls being in school compared to boys, given the population dynamic. In urban or peri-urban, like in Bursa North, you go to Nanumba South, you go to Gushegu, you see the trend that where the drivers are economic, mainly betting, that I'm saying, some form of abuboya, etc. You see that in these three key economic activities that we are recorded in the census, the boys are the major participants in them. And so that perhaps explains the dynamic we are seeing in the northern regions.
And that was the Executive Secretary of Africa Education Watch, Kofi Asare. My colleague James Aveji joins me in the studio with further details of this report. You have been studying the figures, James. What more can you tell us?
Well, Pearl, and so part of the report scaled the challenges down to what they call economic challenges. And their portion said that, in other words, poverty remains a single most cited barrier of school attendance. In such situations, children are often compelled to contribute to households' income through petty trading or labor, reinforcing the cycle of poverty and illiteracy. Children labor further worsens the issue, with many children engaged in subsistence farming, children engage in illegal mining or galamsey and market trading to support their families. Then it went down to talk about the figures in this year, 2025 alone. At least 3,500 school-going children have dropped out of school in the five northern regions, including Upper East and West, Northern Region, Savannah Region, as well as the Northeast Region. Then when you go down to the district breakdowns, there is where they talked about the problem into detail, and it says that, quote, finances and peer influence, poor parental control, betting among boys in the community, and premarital sex become one of the major challenges confronting the children, for which reason they drop out of school across the various districts and the regions.
I must admit that, yes, parental responsibility, as mentioned by the Honourable Member of Parliament, is key. We've seen that there are some communities where, even though there's a school, parents are not minded to enroll their children in the school. And this is where we need Parliament to come in here. Mm. And I must say that, yes, we work closely with Parliament, and we are going to have an engagement with Parliament on this census early next year. In 38(2) of our constitution, there's provision for free compulsory universal basic education. We've been doing it for 19 years since the FKIP started. The challenge is that Ghana has still not mastered the courage to declare basic education compulsory. The discussion always within the political corridors has been that, well, how do we declare basic education compulsory when we've not provided adequate schools, for instance? Mm. But the reality is that no country in this world has adequate schools, has adequacy in any education input required to deliver education service. It starts from somewhere. Mm. I believe strongly that...
Yeah, that the Executive Secretary of Africa Education Watch, Kofi Asare, called on Parliament to intervene in this issue. Earlier, you heard my colleague, James Savedi, with a breakdown of the figures from the research carried out by African Education Watch, rather. Let's bring you other stories now. And on 12 November, six young women were killed and more than 20 others injured in the stampede at Yilwak Sports Stadium during the Ghana Armed Forces recruitment exercise. The military blamed the tragedy on an unexpected surge of applicants who breached security protocols, and senior officers overseeing the process were asked to step aside for investigations. 1 month later, the findings of those investigations remained unpublished. Listen.
The tragic stampede that claimed the lives of six young women during the Ghana Armed Forces recruitment exercise plunged the nation into mourning and raised serious questions about crowd control and safety at public events. At the 37 military hospital in Accra, scenes of grief filled the health facility. The Ghana Armed Forces released a statement which read in part,
"Preliminary investigations indicate that the stampede was triggered by an unexpected surge of applicants who breached security protocols and rushed into the gates ahead of scheduled screening at about 6:20 hours.
The Deputy Minister for Defence, Ernest Bojajemfi, then assured families of the victims of government support and added that one recruitment slot will be made available for each of the victims' families.
His Excellency the President has directed that we give the opportunity to the family to replace all these six dead persons. Of course, we have to check their fitness level."
Despite the Ghana Armed Forces and the acting Defence Minister, Kasiel Atuforsen, confirming the establishment of a board of inquiry to investigate the incident, no findings have been made public yet.
Now, imagine carrying your two-year-old child on your back through airports. Imagine forced to raise tens of thousands of dollars for a bone marrow transplant abroad and then returning home after countless medical interventions in India and Singapore to watch that child die. That is the story of a mother whose son fought acute leukemia, the cancer of the blood. Here are excerpts from John Hughes' latest special assignment documentary, Leukemia, Last Chance Abroad, produced by Emmanuel Jivenu.
If I had married and I had not given birth, this woman has not given birth. And I gave birth to watch him for 4 years, to suffer. It felt like a bad joke on First April. It was like a very bad, terrible joke on First April. Of all the pranks on First April.
First April was no prank for Elizabeth's family. For her, motherhood came with a gift. And then, with grief. Her first child, Jason, was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia before his second birthday. Treatments began in Ghana.
Said we pray. She said yes. We pray hard.
A Cancer is cruel. After 2 years, it returned. The only option left, a bone marrow transplant abroad.
If we were now starting it, maybe we would have gotten the money you're asking for. But after 2 years, cancer treatment is not cheap.
The fight was no longer private.
The 20 cities. Some people sent as much as 2 cities.
India was cold, foreign, and overwhelming.
And bone marrow they put in his body, it's already at 98%. So she looks at it and she's like, we've done it. We are there.
Yeah, we are going.
I was just happy to be coming out. November, Jason finishes eating. He says, mommy, my stomach. This boy starts screaming. And I called Dr. Tegu and I said, Lily, the cancer is back. She said, Jesus, not again. I said, Dr. Tegu, we are heading towards clinical trial. She said, yes. All the things I had gone to do in India, from smuggling rice cooker pots into the ward to cook for my son, to chasing people around with bills, canceling bills, I'm going to do it all over again. The only country that was left was Singapore. At the time, I didn't have 2 cities. I didn't have shishi.
With help from sponsors, Elizabeth made the trip. In Singapore, things only got harder.
So they took a vote and they decided that it wasn't the best use of their medicine. So Jason lost. So what that meant was that was the end of the route. Jason has fought so hard, but it's time to let him rest.
Jason returned to Ghana to spend his final days.
Marshall, and then I went out of the ward.
Well, let's bring you other stories this afternoon. And the latest Bank of Ghana data tracked by Joy News Research shows Ghana's public debt stock swelled by more than 70 billion cedis in quarter three, with projections showing that the total debt could exceed 700 billion cedis by the end of the year, should the cedi remain under dollar pressure. Well, head of research here at Joy News, Isaac Kofieje, has all the data details and he joins me in the studio with more. Isaac, external debt, we understand, is more than 90% of the additional amount added. What more can you tell us?
Well, in fact, Pearl, as of the second quarter when the city was doing so well against the dollar, what we know was that the debt around that time was 613 billion Ghana cedis. Now, remember when the third quarter came and the cedi fell under some sort of pressure where it depreciated by some, you know, more than 20%. Now, we have fresh data from the Bank of Ghana, which is showing that as a result of that, the public debt stock has now risen from 613 billion as of the second quarter to now 684.6 billion. Adding about 71 billion Ghana cedis simply because of the depreciation, or I mean, predominantly because of the depreciation. If you look at the external side, as of the second quarter, our external debt was around 300 million, you know, Ghana cedis. As of now, it is around 367 billion Ghana cedis. If you look at the domestic side, that stayed, you know, fairly stable.
Okay.
But majority of this huge, you know, increase we are seeing is coming from the external side, which is up by some 67 billion Ghana cedis.
And Isaac Kofieje, stay with me because you'll be telling us more about the next story we're about to tell the listeners. And the Office of the Special Prosecutor is raising concerns about its annual budget, saying the amount is not enough, especially given the challenges the office inherited after the former special prosecutor left office. Speaking on the law on the Joy News Channel, the Director of Strategy, Research and Communications at the OSP, Sami Dako, explained that the current team met only an empty building and has had to rely on its limited annual budget to build the office from ground up. We'll hear from him shortly, but first, the head of research, Isaac Kofieje, is in the studio with me with the budgetary allocations and disbursement over the years. Kofi, your team has been taking a look at the budgetary allocations and disbursement. Break it down for us.
Well, so what we understand is that from 2018 to 2026, in terms of just allocations, the OSP has received some 1.8 or 1.2 billion, you know, Ghana cedis. Out of that amount, per our checks and our analysis, it shows that the budget credibility, which means the difference between budget and release, is just around 50%. So technically, the OSP only gets about 50% of what it gets. What we are also learning is that if you look at the total budget, the biggest component of that has been the amount spent to pay workers at the Office of the Special Prosecutor. We understand this year, for instance, out of a budget of 146 million Ghana cedis, about 71 million Ghana cedis of that is supposed to go into the payment of workers. And if you look at the credibility of the budget so far from January to September, we understand that the total budget credibility is around 72%. The amount, spent for on goods and services currently stands around 79%. But the biggest challenge that the OSP faces currently is that out of the total amount allocated for capital expenditure, the office has only received 33% between January and September.
We have been building this office from scratch, which means that apart from an empty building that was donated to the office had to be built from scratch, which means that you need to develop all the divisions of the office. You need to employ people. You need to put in place the infrastructure to be able to increase. Remember that the office was also set up without an establishment budget. So the office is being built from the annual budget, which is not enough. So right. I'm saying that the office has had problems. And people think that the office was just there and everything is there. Even as we speak, we do not have a forensic
lab. What have you...
Well, you heard that the Director of Research, Strategy and Communications at the Office of the Special Prosecutor, Sami Dako. Well, he also says that the office has been grappling with structural challenges.
Many people are putting a lot of pressure on the OSP to deliver, which is good, is welcome. But we also think that people should understand it in context that the OSP is relatively young and it has some challenges. It's overcome many of the challenges, all of them 2023.
Okay.
So Kisi took back 2021. It was not until 2023 that the office had its full staff with some realistic logistics to be able to work. Remember that the office was also set up without an establishment budget. So the office is being built from the annual budget, which is not enough. So I'm saying that the office has had problems.
You're listening to The Midday News, live on Joy 99.7. We have more stories, including sports, when we return. The Midday News. Thanks for staying with us. It's time for sport, and Mubarak is here.
Thank you very much, Pearl. Ghana's Black Stars will take on Germany in an international friendly ahead of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. The match will come off on March 30, 2026 in Stuttgart. Ghana's FA's Communications Director, Henry Asante-Chum, has been speaking to Joy Sports.
Germany is a top team in Europe with some amazing players in their setup. They are coached by a very young Nagelsmann who has done very well for himself since he burst onto the scene. We also believe that they will give us a very good, you know, test and a very good opposition going into the tournament. They give us a European flavor. We've got two European teams in our group, and you cannot take it for granted, the quality of Germany, the opposition, and the tests they are going to give us. So among the teams available and the discussions, engagements that we had prior to this announcement, we felt Germany will be right fit for match.
That's the FA's Communications Director, Henry Asante-Chum.
Thank you very much, Mubarak, for the sport news. Now, a member of the National Democratic Congress has died after being attacked by a swarm of bees in Pandai. The man, whose name has not been released, was reportedly returning home from a party meeting involving national and regional teams, which concluded around 2 p.m. yesterday. The incident occurred around 4:30 p.m. when the group unexpectedly encountered the bees along their route, a situation the party says has caused a panic among party faithful and supporters. My colleague Martina Bugri joins us from the region with the latest on what happened. Martina, thank you for your time here on the Midday News. Now, where exactly does this incident leave the campaign in the area?
So we are told that a meeting was held in Pamba yesterday in the afternoon, which ended around 2 p.m. And later on, around 4:30, the incident occurred. Speaking to some reporters on the ground, we are told that it happened on the highway, the main Pandai highway. These bees were in the middle of the road, and people who saw them earlier started running away. But these two who were on a motorbike did not see it early and rode into the bees. Now, when it happened, in their bid to navigate and escape, they felt of the motorbike. The one who was behind was able to escape, but the one who was riding could not, and the beast tanked him to death. And we are told that he had come to a meeting at the Pandai chief pilot representing his chief. And after the meeting, he moved to the venue where the party was holding the meeting to go home with the person who had brought him. And then later the incident occurred.
And Martina, what has been the response from security agencies so far, briefly?
Now, we are told that the party has officially reported to the security. The issue has been moved from the Pandai District Police to the regional police headquarters. We tried to make some efforts to get information, but we are told that the crime officer and some other executives are in the meeting.
Martina Bugri is a Northern Regional Correspondent. Thank you so much for that update. We can now listen to a BE expert, Dr. Kwame Saka Ado, on this incident.
The first thing to do to protect yourself or anybody in that vicinity is to leave the place immediately, and they don't like to be disturbed. So the first thing is to run away from, and as you go, then the bees are less worried. But if you are stung, then the first thing you have to do is to cover the stink point, because they leave a scent which will attract other bees to attack you. So it is good for people to be aware that if there are bee colonies, they should be left alone. Don't disturb them with noise, with scents that the bees don't like.
And I'll stay in Pandai because a new survey by Global Info Analytics ahead of the Pandai parliamentary rerun suggests a closely contested race. The poll released on Sunday, December 14, shows the New Patriotic Party's candidate, Matthew Nyindam, narrowly leading with 50% voter support. His closest challenger, the National Democratic Congress candidate, Daniel Nsalawat Power, follows closely with 46%. Joining me in the studio with a breakdown of the findings is my colleague, James Aveji. Now, James, how was this poll conducted and what was the sample size?
Well, the poll was conducted by the Global Info Analytics between 11th and 13th December 2025 using face-to-face interviews. It covered about 1,035 registered voters across 17 electoral areas in the constituency, and it has a 99% confidence level and a margin error of plus or minus 3.9%.
And tell us more about what the poll is saying.
It puts the NPP's Matthew Nyindam leading with 50%, closely followed by the NDC's Daniel Nsalawat Power on 46%. 1% of voters support other candidates, which is the third candidate, while 3% remain undecided. However, it describes the contest as a statistical dead heat, which means that the gap between the two leading candidates falls within the margin of error. And as a result of this, the race is too close to call, according to the Global Info Analytics, and the undecided voters could ultimately determine the outcome on December 30.
James Aveju, thank you very much. Now let's go to the court now, and the Ashanti Regional Chairman of the New Patriotic Party, Bernard Nchibuisiaka, also known as Chairman Wuntumi, returned to court today. My colleague Fatal Bayaga was there. Fatal, he's joined me in the studio right now. Fatal, bring us up to speed with the latest with regards to this case.
So today was supposed to be case management in relation to Wuntumi's Samara Boy case. So they came to court, the lawyers led by Andy Apiakubi. When I got to court, the documents presented by the prosecution, according to Wuntumi's lawyers, were not readable, and for that reason they were not ready to proceed with the case, and the judge listened to that and consequently adjourned the case to tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Fatal Bayaga. Now let's take you to Nigeria now. And a ceremony to confer a chieftaincy title on President Mahama is underway in Osun State, Nigeria. As a traditional ruler of Ile Ife, the Oni of Ife, His Majesty Oba Adeyeye Enitan Ogunwusi Ojaja II prepares to bestow a prestigious Yoruba chieftaincy title on the president of Botswana and other distinguished bestow a prestigious Yoruba title on the president John Dramani Mahama. Well, the president of Botswana and other distinguished guests are expected at the ceremony. The Oni of Ife is a traditional ruler of Ile Ife, a historic town in Osun State, Nigeria, and is considered one of the most important and respected Yoruba kings. Presidential Affairs Correspondent Maxwell Adjagba is in Osun State, Nigeria, and reports. We apologize for that. We cannot bring you that inset. We'll bring you later in our subsequent bulletins. And that's how we end the Midday News. My name is Pearl Ifori. Good afternoon and thank you for your time.
Joy 99.7 FM.